You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flueckiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Your Ultimate Life today. Me and my buddy, me and my buddy meditating there. If you're not watching the video, then you didn't see my background. I have this amazing peaceful background that I don't know really where it is. It's a beautiful picture that I have that I'm using. And it looks like it is somewhere in Tibet or somewhere like that, those mysterious mountain retreats. And there's a fellow here in the orange robe meditating in a beautiful village up on the side. Anyway, today I wanted to talk about left, right, and center. And this fellow, this meditating guy, has something to do with that. So my thought about today was inspired by a coaching call I had earlier today, because I'm a coach. And people often ask, well, what do you do? What does that mean? I mean, everybody's heard of coaching, right? People think of athletic coaches or performance coaches, singing coaches, piano teachers, you know, all those kinds of things that are both teachers and coaches. And a coach is really simple. A coach is in the people encouragement business, principally. Now, an athletic coach maybe is an expert in the particular sport that they're coaching, but there's no way that a person who's a coach, might be a little older, was a performer before, that is always better than their students or their clients. Okay, and the purpose of a coach is to help the person become the best that they can be, not anything reference to where the coach is, right? And so I was thinking about an interview that Michael Phelps gave in between the second to the last and the last Olympics, when he was the next to most decorated Olympian. And the following Olympics, he won a few more medals and became the most decorated Olympian in history. And he gave an interview and he talked about his coach and how many times that the coach caught him sneaking out of the gym where he was supposed to be doing workouts because he didn't really want to do the workout that day. And the coach, of course, reminded him of what was important, and, you know, called him back in. And I'm moving the URL there. Ultimate life challenge. And so every athletic person, they're not just getting a coach for fun, because coaching is rigorous. Okay? Anyone that's coached at the level of, you know, professional sports or state championships, national championships, world competition or Olympics or anything like that, that work is rigorous. It is difficult. It requires focus and attention. And as Stephen Pressfield talks about in his books, it requires you to show up and do the work every day. Well, this program's about creating your ultimate life. So that's like being on the podium for life. Okay, gold, silver, bronze, but it's like being in the finals, on the podium with your own life. Do you even know what that means? That's a real interesting question. Do you know if you are on the podium, your own podium for life, having the gold medal for life, your own personal life, day to day, what would it look like? Most people tell me big cash, money. But those that have been there will tell you that's not enough. And sometimes it is a distraction. It is a pain in the ass sometimes. And so you got to think about what are the elements of your ultimate life. I know what I know about it. There was a time I had a 30-year career in the energy industry. It was in the United States and in Canada. Some very high-profile positions in both government and industry. And sometimes the positions that I had put me where I was making decisions that affected big companies and to the tune of billions, yes, with a B, billions of dollars. And so, of course, I got well paid making those kinds of decisions and being in that position. And in that position where I was making a lot of money, that was the most miserable time of my life. Wow, how did that happen? I had every toy I could buy. I had a garage full of six cars and motorcycles and all kinds of crazy stuff, and lived a very profligate and silly lifestyle. And you know why I say silly? Not because there's anything wrong with having some cars or whatever. but it was a waste of resources because I wasn't doing anything to add good to the world. I wasn't doing anything that made a real difference, that elevated other people around me. Oh, I hired people and paid them well. Yeah, they made good money too. But there was nothing about my work that elevated people's hearts, spirits, love, life, or anything else. I had a conversation, not the one I'm referring to about left, right, and center. We'll get to that in a minute with somebody else today. And a new person, brand new, never met him. And we were talking about this very thing. What is it that makes people happy? What is it that makes you happy? Yes, you need enough money to pay next month's mortgage and 6 months of everything and maybe a year and maybe so you can go on every vacation you want. I was just talking with our host, Sam, before we got on the show about moving to a fun place, Vancouver Island. So next summer of 2024, a year from right now, next August, we're going to move over to Vancouver Island. Now, that's a beautiful place. If you've spent some time there, the weather is beautiful. Yeah, sometimes it rains a lot, but it's nice compared to a lot of Canada. And the greenery is gorgeous, and the people are, you know, very environment conscious. And I kind of think of it sometimes as woo-woo central. Salt Spring Island's near there, and Dr. Weil has an office there and so forth. But that could be a dream for someone, and that's for us a place to go. We've been living in Edmonton for a number of years, and that's frozen north central. So we're going to move to Vancouver Island, and that could be thought of as, okay, an ultimate life thing. But here's how I define an ultimate life now. After living in a place where I made more money and was miserable, and having experienced bankruptcy and financial, you know, mishaps earlier, and having been in trouble with the IRS in the United States and with Canada Revenue Agency, which is the Canadian IRS, all of those things many years ago, but I've had those experiences, and I've had also the experience of making more money than, you know, anybody can spend and being miserable about it. And here's what I know about the ultimate life. It's a life of purpose. First and foremost, a reason for getting up, a reason for taking the actions you take, a goal you're trying to accomplish that's not centered on me. I want, I need, I, but centered on service, on loving and giving. And that's what we were talking about in that convo earlier today. We as humans, we are not built to live in isolation, and we're not built to live for only our own needs. We are built to love and serve each other. That's how we're happiest, even physically. When we're in community, you know what it's like to go serve and serve in the soup kitchen, do something at church or in the community. You come home and you're tired and it feels good. Well, there's some neurotransmitters, oxytocin and other stuff that get released like when you hug somebody. Some people say 8 seconds. I read another place that said 20 seconds, but a long physical hug with someone, as long as it's not prickly and people are being weird, it releases those neurotransmitters. Well, we are built to love and serve each other. And if you're not doing something that is in that love and service, then you're not feeling that neurotransmitter of connection, that beautiful feeling that comes from community, from doing good in a communal cause. So that's one of the reasons I say the principal component of this ultimate life where you love everything that you're doing is a life of purpose. So if somebody asks you right now, what's your purpose? What is the purpose of your life? If it's Wednesday, you might say to get to the weekend and then I'm going to go play. It might be, well, I'm going to get through this hot part of the summer. The people in Phoenix right now are saying, I can't wait till it stops being 110. I saw the other day that there's been now 31 or 35 days in a row over 110. I've lived in Phoenix two different times, the first time for 13 or 14 summers, and the second time for 8 summers, and you don't count years in Phoenix, you count summers. So 22 summers. And the hottest I remember was 11 days in a row over 110. And now I saw they hit 31, I think. Unbelievable. And then there's all this talk about climate change and water shortages and everything else. Of course, the point here is purpose. So the people in Phoenix may think their purpose right now is to just get through this summer to where it's going to cool down in the fall or in the late fall. It doesn't, and the last 100 degree day is always in November. Maybe your purpose is to just get through this year. I know during COVID, it was to get out of lockdown and those things. I'm talking about a larger purpose. Some people, philanthropists, are trying to end hunger or literacy or those kinds of things. You don't have to be connected with something like that and be devoting your world and every minute of your day to doing that. But you do need a purpose. If you're going to live that life of purpose, prosperity, and joy, that's my words, but I mean the one that feels like you love getting up every day. Can you imagine, if you're not doing it already, can you imagine waking up every day excited? Excited about what's on your calendar. Not just sometimes, but every single day. I want you to let that sink in for a minute. The second part of the ultimate life is a life of prosperity. I use prosperity instead of cash, even though that's a piece of it, because prosperity means richness, abundance of not just money, but of relationships, of love, of everything. Now, I'm limping around the house with a cane right now because 10 days ago, I trashed my hip. You know what's funny? I trashed my hip on a bike ride with the young men in our church. So I was on a service thing, being part of the leadership of the young men, you know, the teenage boys in our church, and not young men. And that ride cost me, because Friday morning I got some spinal stuff anyway and some arthritis, but it pinched and inflamed the nerve so badly I was hobbling around the house. Still am. So I'm paying for that service, and you know what? I don't care. That service, the opportunity to love and give and serve, is the bread and butter. So prosperity is much more than cash. Now, I'm not downplaying our need to eat, and I'm not downplaying how much fun it is to be able to go buy the things you want, the car that you want, live in a nice place, have the food that you want, et cetera, et cetera. You need to create that. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in a minute, because there's lots of ways to create the money you need. There's hard ways and there's easy ways. I don't know about you, but I prefer the not necessarily easy, but the most fun ways. I prefer the way to make money that's the most fulfilling, the one I look forward to every day, and the one I love to do. That's how I want to make money. So purpose, prosperity, and then the third element is joy. Purpose, prosperity, and joy. Now, I'm going to talk for a minute about the hard way and the easy way to make money. The hard way to make money is to go learn a skill and then sell it in the marketplace. You might learn to deliver pizza. You might learn to be a surgeon. Both of those are fine. I need delivery people, especially during the pandemic. The delivery, you know, profession exploded, and now we've got DoorDash and 27 other delivery things that weren't even happening or happening very small. Zoom also, right? So delivery people are in great demand, and I love them, and I love those that do it. It saves a ton of time. So maybe you're a doctor. Maybe you deliver pizza. Maybe you're an architect. Maybe you're an artist. It doesn't matter. That skill that you developed and you sell it in the marketplace is how you make money. Maybe you have to go to a place, to an office. That's changing. Businesses aren't even building big office buildings anymore. Some aren't. Because the idea of everybody coming to a central office is now changing with the internet and the ability to have Wi-Fi everywhere and reach everybody everywhere. So remote and distributed workforces are becoming more the norm. Freelancing is becoming more the norm. I read an article the other day, or I actually heard about an article from a client of mine. I didn't read it, where freelancing is going to be the largest single occupation in the Western world. I think he was quoting the United States, but and I forgot the year, but I think 2027 is the tipping point. More than 50% of people will list freelancing as their primary income source. Wow, that is a far cry. When I heard about freelancing many years ago, I thought freelancing were those people that couldn't keep a job. And so they ran around doing whatever they could do and making a living. Those are the, freelancers. Not anymore. More than 50% will be freelancers. So purpose, prosperity, and joy. Well, the easy way to make money is not just learning a skill and selling it in the marketplace. There's nothing wrong with that, but there is a better way. There is a more fun way to create the cash you need to live. I talked about this last week a bit, and I'm going to talk just briefly about it today, and then we're going to get to this left, right, and center thing that I wanted to hit on, especially today. The skill you have that you sell in the marketplace is just one thing you have. The other things you have are your natural gifts, the things you're naturally good at. And the third thing you have is your life experience. I saw Tony Robbins' advertisement the other day, and he was on there with Dean Graziosi, and they were talking about that very thing. Tony said, have you ever, wanted to use your life experience and turn it into a business? And he was talking about this very thing, and I was enjoying that. I chuckled a bit because that's what I've been talking about. That's what this Ultimate Life Challenge is about. It's about learning to take your three most important assets. The skill you have to sell in the marketplace is one, but it's not your best. And 70%+ of people don't like their jobs. So if that's all you're doing, you're probably part of that 70% plus who work for the weekend, who can't wait for summer vacation, et cetera, et cetera. It's time to upgrade. It's time to upgrade. That yearning in your heart to do something with your natural gifts and your life experience combined with your existing skills, that's the most powerful offering you have to the world. I didn't know that. I spent 30 years in a career because I happened to be good at it. And I made a lot of money and enjoyed a lot of misery and unhappiness doing stuff that didn't matter much for the good of the world, that made me cash, and it made me miserable. So I'm a walking testament to that. If you combine those skills with your natural gifts and you combine them further with your life experience, that's what I'm doing right now. That's how I ended up being a coach. And what do I coach? Well, I coach performance. I coach how you combine those three things into your magic rope, right? Your magic voice, your existing skills, your natural gifts, and your life experience. That's what the Ultimate Life Challenge is about. So if you're tired of working a job you hate or being stifled from using your full creativity, your authentic creativity, your real self, I want it. I need that, your life experience, the things you've learned by your hardships. That's where all my coaching skill comes from. I said earlier, I'd gone through bankruptcy, and part of that years of misery was addictions and a bunch of other stuff. All that stuff combined have made me into a very happy person. I have come past all that, and now for the last 15 years, I've become an author, a speaker. I write books. I coach people. I get to travel. I make good money, and I get to help people in a visceral way. You can do that. There's nothing magic about me. I just took the invitation that I'm offering in this Ultimate Life Challenge. Anyway, so one of the coaching calls I had this morning with very much this conversation, this individual I've had as a client for a number of years, and they said to me, I'm really enjoying my life. Except this big chunk of it, which is this work thing, where I have to work with these miserable a-holes. And I asked him, I said, so why are you spending all your love and energy working with miserable a-holes? And the shrug was, what else could I do? Well, let's explore that. What else could he do or you do? This is where left, right, and center comes in. You really have three choices. Choice number one is what most people do. It'll sound very familiar. It's what I did for a long time. It's what you could be doing. And if you're not, I know for sure you know some bunch of people that are. The left, choice number one, is, I don't know what else to do, so I'm going to tough it out. I'm going to keep with this job or this career that isn't fulfilling. I don't really like it, but it pays the bills, it makes me money, and it allows me to keep food on the table, roof overhead, take some vacations, and all the people that depend on me taken care of, and everybody shuts up. So I'm just going to do it and be miserable. And maybe on the side, I'll pursue some hobbies that are kind of fun. That doesn't change the fact that in this particular client's case, 5 days a week, at least 12, sometimes 14 hours a day. So somewhere between 60 and 70 hours a week, this individual is working in a situation where there's stress, there's not a lot of fun stuff, the conversations are difficult, the people are difficult, some of the partners he's working with, you know, they don't have good communication, et cetera, et cetera. And you know the drill. Maybe you have had a dipweed boss, or you've had, you know, a company that was had a crappy culture, or on and on and on. I remember working in one company where we talked about work-life balance, right? And the CEO, because I was one of the officer positions, CEO laughed and said, work-life balance. And the divorce rate among the employees we had, and we were in a very stressful startup situation, but the divorce rate was really high. And people's lives were being trashed because we were working six, sometimes 7 days a week, sometimes 12, 14 hours a day because of the startup pressure. Yeah, whatever, work-life balance. Heh. Well, needless to say, he was divorced and miserable too. And I say this now, I found out about a year ago that he's dead now too. I don't know the correlation. I haven't had anything to do with this individual for about 20 years, but you know, so that is one option. And that is what we default to when we don't either have the courage to do something different, to explore it with the intent of creating something different, or we try a little and it seems hard, or we get a lot of discouragement, people saying, oh, you can't do that. You're stuck, you're done. Or we feel like we have golden handcuffs, right? You're making too much money. If you went and did something else, you'd have to take a gigantic pay cut. And so it's off the table. All those are just excuses. And if you're saying that, I'm calling you out. Be as mad as you want. It's the truth. There is always a way to create what you want. This monk here is sitting here. Now, there's a big valley in between where he is and that building up there. But you know what? There's a path. And there's a path up to that mountain behind my head right there. There's a path all the way up there. Now, if he's going to walk that, he's going to have to go down and up and maybe down and up some more. And the climb up that mountaintop is steep. But there is a path. So when someone says, I got golden handcuffs on, I'm making too much money, I can't quit, what they're saying is, I'm unwilling to explore what it would really take. I'm unwilling to make the sacrifices, changes, or other adjustments required so I can create a new life. I know somebody right this minute who had a situation exactly like that. And he was working with a coach that I know. And he said those very things. And he was very successful, making a lot of money. And the coach said, burn it down. Burn it down. You're miserable. Burn it down and start over. And of course, it was met with the same skepticism and same horrific gasps. And then with further conversation and so forth, they did. They dumped the whole thing and started all over. Now, on the other side, he's on the top of the mountain making more money or just as much, completely happy, built a different empire of one he likes. Did it take work, sacrifices, and struggle in between? Yes. But the truth is there's a path. So this idea that you can't do it is not true. There is always a path. Now, the trajectory might be steep, or if you have a more modest trajectory, it might take a longer time to get there. But there's a path. So don't say there isn't. Now, sometimes people say, well, there's no path because why? Because they're scared of it and because they want to convince themselves that it's impossible so they don't have to do the work. You know what that's like? It's like people that I hear when I play the piano and they say, oh, wow, I wish I played like that. And, you know, how long have you been? And I tell them, well, I've been playing the piano for 60 years because I'm 67. I'll be 68 in December. And I started when I was 5 or 6. So 62 years, maybe. Okay. And so, yeah, it's put in thousands, tens of thousands of hours on the bench, practicing, learning stuff, learning music and theory and training my ears and exercising my fingers. I did that today. Today, I still do piano work, exercises. Why? Because I want to be on that mountain. So sometimes we say I can't because what it means is I'm unwilling. And that's okay. So left, which is where you stay stuck, where you are, is you're allowed. You're allowed to do that. And you're also allowed to complain the rest of your life and be a bitter, frustrated person who thinks they got hard done by and got lousy breaks and work for a lousy company or a lousy person. And when bad things happen, blame, you know, the universe or God or the economy or whoever you want. So that's one option. Stay where you're at. Continue to complain. Believe you got slapped around and that there's no way out. That's an option. Another option is right. So you have left, right. That's the complete opposite end of the world. And this is what I was talking about with my client this morning. I said, well, you could just quit. You could just walk away from everything and start over. Now, that's a pretty dramatic and drastic thing. And it certainly has consequences. But you know what? I would argue, having done both, having done this at the left end, complained and stayed with it, and then having done this extreme, that the consequences of just walking away and starting over, even though it is dramatic, sudden, and slaps you in the face, is less painful than staying in misery. So that's just my experience. So anyway, walking away and starting over, jumping off a cliff and building your parachute on the way down is one way people talk about that. So that is another option. Left, right. We'll talk about center in a minute. So what does that mean? Well, sometimes it's very abrupt. So for me, in August of 2007, I was at the pinnacle of another one of the positions that I had in the industry I was in. My 30-year anniversary was November of 2007. In August, so just a couple months short of 30 years, I had a very dramatic set of personal circumstances. I'm not going to tell that story now because it'll take too long for this episode, but if you want details, it's in the book Tightrope of Depression, My Journey from Darkness, Despair, and Death to Light, Love, and Life. So I just walked away from everything. Not in August. The event happened in August, and I think I finally literally walked away from everything. Resigned, quit, walked away from millions of dollars of contracts, start all over again in October. So a couple months after the initiating events, I just walked away and started over. So almost exactly 30 years. And I walked away not knowing what to do, not knowing where to go. I didn't have a better job offer. I didn't have a better opportunity. I didn't have, you know, some other thing. I just walked away to start over because where I was killing me in a literal sense. And when I did that, I had to figure it out as I went along. And that was difficult. I won't downplay it. As the title of the book indicates, I struggled for decades with depression and self-loathing, self-sabotage, and all kinds of stuff that had plagued my career, a bunch of highs and lows and ups and downs. So I walked away and started over, and that brought a whole host of things. It brought financial struggles. It brought, you know, personal struggles. It brought career struggles, embarrassment. There were people who were angry at what I did. There were some people who tried intentionally to harm me physically. There were others that tried to harm me career-wise. So it was a bit of a mess. So for the first year after I just walked away, it was a mess. It was a gigantic mess. But in retrospect, now 16 years on, it was less of a mess than the final year of the mess had been. I say this not to encourage anybody to go jump off the cliff and build your parachute on the way down, but to tell you that it is survivable. It is survivable. You'd be surprised what you can create when you decide you're done. I think that's the reason that there's a legend, at least, that one of the conquistadors burned the boats. You know, they sailed, I think it was a conquistador that came to Mexico and, you know, faced the Aztecs or the, I don't know, things. I think it was Aztecs. But anyway, he burned the boat. So there wasn't a place to retreat. Now, whether he was on a good mission or should be castigated for everything they did, that's an entirely different cultural discussion. That's not part of this conversation, but the burning the boats is a hallmark of a firm commitment and a decision. There is no retreat. It's kind of like if you're going to do a bungee jump, you suit up and you put on all the gear and you're there. And as long as you haven't jumped yet, you know, there's a chance to pull back. There's hesitation. There's an opportunity to retreat. There's all the butterflies and the fear and the choking in the throat, depending on how frightened you are of those kinds of things. I have a client who did one of those in New Zealand. New Zealand is famous for having a couple of really high bungee jumps. One was 260 or 80 feet, and the other was 900 feet. He did not do the one at 900 feet, but he did the one at 200, and he described the whole thing in great detail about getting all ready and everything else and all of the holding back and then the jump and the liberation of the moment of choice. There is a liberation. There is power in deciding. Now, obviously, when you've jumped in a bungee jump, there's no taking things back. But you know what? It is possible to make that committed of decision even when you're not playing with gravity. Like the bungee jump, you're done. Like you're done. There's no changing that, and that's really obvious. What prevents me or you from making a commitment that is that firm, where the idea of retreat is simply off the table? Not going to retreat. I'm doing this no matter what. I'm going up the mountain. I'm going to change this habit. I'm going to get my body in better shape. I'm going to learn a new skill. I'm going to fix this relationship. I'm going to make a change. It doesn't require the unalterable force of gravity, like jumping off a cliff, to make a firm decision. But a bungee jump's a good comparison. So jumping off the cliff is a stark, powerful, unalterable way to make a change. Quit whatever you're doing. Leave the situation. Walk away. It's like that old song, 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover. Just do it. Make it happen. Now, that is absolutely the right choice when a situation is threatening enough, when you've had enough negative stuff that it's just, I'm done. For me, that's how it was in August of 2007. And it took me a few weeks to get things organized, but then I just left. And one of the things that happened a little earlier, end of July and August, was I had attempted suicide for the second time. So that gives you an idea of how serious it was. So for me, jumping off the cliff was the right decision. And it is sometimes. But you have to just do it. And don't worry about the consequences. Go make the choice. All right, so that's the left. Stay there and suffer and complain. The one at the right is just quit and deal with whatever comes. The middle one is an interesting thought, because often when we think of middle, we think of a negotiated settlement or a negotiated some kind of compromise. I have a friend who is a very dear friend who's been in a legal battle for about 4 years. And he had asked me to come and be an expert witness. And I did that in last November. And then it was before an arbitrator and legally binding arbitration and all that stuff. And it was a regular hearing and Your Honor and all that jazz. So I testified and so did some other people. And then there was a time for decision. And then suddenly the parties decided they were going to go to settlement. And about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I got a note from my friend saying they had reached a settlement. Now, in a settlement, nobody gets everything. People decide it's not worth the risk of a judge or an arbitrator dropping the hammer and making a decision. They both decide that they'd rather come to an agreement where they control the outcome than leave it in the hands of somebody else, even if they think they've had a good case. So that's what they did, and they reached a settlement. That's not what I'm talking about in the middle here. What I'm talking about in the middle is this. If you don't like your situation, whatever it is, your job, your living situation, your health, your how you treat yourself, your habits, you know, whatever it is, you don't like that, you're not prepared to quit, like walk away from your job, leave a partnership, leave your spouse, just walk away. That's not the right answer. Okay, there is another way. And that's what I want to spend the remainder of my time talking about. Because it is not a settlement where you settle for less. Here's the secret to this. You and I, we don't control someone's behavior. Anyone except our own. So let's talk about it in the context of the problem presented by my client this morning. He was talking about working with in a situation that was stressing him out, too many hours. Some of the people he's working with are challenging, and so much so that he separated his life into two parts. Well, there are these 70 hours that I don't like at all. And then there's the weekends and everything else. He's been in a 25-year marriage. He loves his wife. They have a great relationship, all kinds of good stuff. And so he's like, the stark contrast was really getting to him. It's like, there's this beautiful part, and there's this huge chunk of my waking life. Well, if you think about the fact that you sleep 7 or 8 hours, 50 hours, and 70 you hate, that's already 120 of your 168 hours. You've got a big chunk of your life. It's miserable. Why would you stay like that? So if you're not going to just suffer and you're not going to quit, what else can you do? Well, what else can you do? That's the real question. And here's the answer. I'm not going to pretend to talk about it and then not talk about it like sometimes people do. There are two parts to this equation. There is the thing itself. This hand right here represents whatever it is that you don't like. Usually, that is some external circumstance. If you live in Phoenix, it's the weather, maybe. If you work with a bunch of negative people, it is the behavior and attitudes of partners or clients or the circumstance. If the economy is treating you poorly, it is the economy. Whatever it is, it's the thing. The hard thing, the negative thing, the one you've been complaining about, the one that seems to make you miserable, the people or the circumstances, brick wall, this thing. Well, you know what? It isn't the thing that makes you miserable. And this is the key to the middle. This is a powerful thing. So I'm going to say it slow because I want you to think about this a little. It is not the thing that makes you miserable. You can't control the weather, the government, the behavior of other people, partners, business partners, spouses, the economy. You don't control that. So it isn't the thing that makes you miserable. It is your relationship to the thing. It is your attitude about the thing. You, I, my client in this case, have an opinion, a thought, a choice, a decision that the behavior, the actions, the weather, the situation is a problem. That thing is miserable. And since you don't control that thing, you're stuck. You can't control that thing, so you keep banging your head against the wall. Well, that your relationship to the thing is what the struggle is. That's where the work can happen. So rather than going and negotiating some kind of, in this case, my other friend, this financial compromise where they settled somewhere not in the either one wanted, you can have a perfectly happy life. And you might be laughing at me right now, but you can have a perfectly happy life, and this thing that was bothering you doesn't have to change at all. You don't want to quit because you've looked at it, assessed the turmoil and consequences that would be there. Fine. You're free to live in misery, or you can live in happiness and not change that at all. And you might be thinking, Kellen, what the heck are you talking about? I'll tell you what you're talking about. You can make a choice to learn to love what is. What? Love what is? You can't change what is. Anytime you or I argue with reality, we're going to lose 100% of the time. So I'm going to give you some examples because it's easier to do that than to talk in the abstract about loving something you thought was difficult. 12 days ago tonight, I did that bike ride. The next morning, I got up, unable to walk. I spent all day Saturday in the emergency room, IV, pain meds, and everything else. And then since then, I've been gradually recovering, walking with a cane, and I love it. I'm grateful. I think it's the most fun, beautiful thing that ever happened to me. Kellen, are you crazy? No. It's a choice. It's allowed me to reflect on my health. It's allowed me to reflect on what I need to do differently because arthritis is hurting my right side. The discs are deteriorating. So what do I need to change? The other way I can do is be mad at my back, mad at life, mad at aging, mad at whatever I need to, and then be miserable, which is this left end here. I choose not to do that. In fact, I choose to be grateful that the doctor in the ER told me that at a maximum of 90 days, he said in a max of 90 days, 90% of these cases resolve themselves. That doesn't mean my discs will be repaired because they won't, but it means I'll get my mobility back and be back where I was. And with some physical therapy and some strengthening exercises, I might be able to get almost everything back. So this was a gentle, loving, kind wake-up call to do something different. So rather than chafe or be mad or angry at it, I love it. I'm grateful. And I say thank you every morning when I get up, even though I've got to sleep funny with a pillow in a certain way or I can't sleep at all. And even though the first several days I was on pain medication that made me sick, I love it. I'm grateful for it. So that is an example. And I want you right now to think of something you are upset about that involves some other person, some externality that you don't control. So many times I talk to clients and they say, well, I'd be happy if so-and-so would just this, if my partner would just do this, if my business, if I could just find some more clients, if I could just make some more money. You have the ability right now to choose to be happy. There's a guy that wrote, Neil Pasricha. He used to be one of the C-suite people at Walmart. And now he wrote a book called The Happiness Equation. You should look it up. It's kind of fun. We have been raised with the idea that we work really hard and then we get stuff and then we're happy. He, like I, discovered that was backwards. Stuff doesn't make you happy. He said that equation is completely wrong, and that's the book, The Happiness Equation. He turned it backwards. He said, be happy first. Now, if you've been living your whole life with the idea that certain things have to happen in order to be happy, then you, and like I did, you're handing your happiness to some externality, some weather, some certain amount of money, some certain amount of health, some behavior of another person, a certain person loving you, or a certain boss getting fired or, you know, retiring or whatever. You're handing your life over to some externality. I challenge you right here, right now, to rethink the whole thing. Pick the most irritating, egregious, pain in the ass thing right now that is outside of your control. The thing we were just talking about. Pick that thing. And let's talk about changing your relationship to the thing, your attitude, your feeling, your thought about it. Instead of blaming it, instead of vilifying or yelling at it, love it. Lean into it. Ask a weird question. What can this thing that I've hated for so long do to bless my life? Now, that kind of change doesn't happen like a light switch, usually. Okay, certainly didn't for me. When I jumped off a cliff, I had to go through a lot of struggles, and it took some years to get organized. But you don't have to jump off the cliff and bring all the consequences of that. If and talking my client situation, they're going to keep the work that they have. And the question we left with was this: what can I do to change the way I feel about this business, these hours, these partners, this struggle that is this thing that I don't like so much? What can I do to change my attitude just 2% tomorrow? Not 100%, just 2%. Now, I pick a small number, 1%, 2%, 3%, it doesn't matter, because it's achievable. And then we explored ideas. So if I look at a health situation or this, my client of mine's, this behavior of externalities, you know, financial and others, we came up with several suggestions. Well, maybe if we get to know this person better, or if we think of alternatives, or we think of what this problem has caused us to learn to do. What have I learned from this? I remember when I was on the way to the ER a week ago Saturday, I said to my wife, who was driving me, I said to her in the car, well, and I was really in pain, but I was gritting my teeth, and I said, I'm going to figure out what the blessing is here. Now, you might think that I'm a nutcase for talking like this, but you know, since I made the dramatic change at the end of 2007, jumped off the cliff, this is one of the most important things I have learned. I can't move that mountain, but I can learn to love it. I really can. I don't mean tolerate it. I don't mean, well, all right. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about leaning in and loving your life as it is. Now, that doesn't mean you can't be working on change. So in this Ultimate Life Challenge, what we talk about there is exactly this. Love what you have, and at the same time, think about what else can I do. But here's what I can promise you, and this could be the most important key takeaway. If there's something about your current situation, money, health, relationship, satisfaction, purpose, prosperity, joy, something you want to change, your ability to change it will be 10 times greater if you start from a place of loving what is instead of hating what is, instead of blaming and arguing and chafing and railing against things. You look for the blessing and the gratitude. And there's a real easy way to understand why. When I'm in anger and frustration, that creates a set of chemistry in my body that's damaging. It narrows my creativity. It essentially makes me stupid. It makes all of us stupid. When I create love, harmony, opportunity, growth, positivity, when I live in that place, I have more creativity. I have more access to intuition. I get better results, better answers, more focused solutions, and I do better and faster. So here, it's in your own interest. It's not like, okay, let's figure out how to be some woo-woo on a mountain meditating all the time. It's not that at all. It's your own interest. It will serve you. It will bless you to change the things you want to change. And at the same time, be at peace with what you have instead of angry, frustrated, and negative. That right there is the center. Tolerate and suffer, jump off a cliff and quit, figure it out on the way down, or change who you are in relationship to the problem. That's the magic, because you can be happy with what is. At the same time, you're working to change it. And because you choose to love what is, you're more productive, you make faster decisions, you make better choices, and you get more done moving to creating a more productive and powerful situation. And of course, that's the goal of your ultimate life. It's a goal to create that life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. If this interests you, then I'm inviting you to go to the challenge. Go to that URL and sign up for the next one. But regardless, you are in control. Nobody can take your happiness from you. Only you. Nobody can make you miserable. Only you. Conversely, you own all the levers to create anything you want, including your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.